This is Mandy, and I welcome you in today's episode. We are going to be chatting with Christina. Viewer discretion is advised. So please make sure that you are ready to dive into this chat. Feel free to pause and exit out of the episode when we get to the parts where Christina begins to explain some of the physical violations that she experienced in her 12 years inside of the Potter's House Christian International Cult in Reno, Nevada. Once again, thank you for supporting Mandy Speaks Up. And if you know anybody who may be in a cult or may be experiencing this life inside of this international cult, there are links below that will help you to share this episode so that they may see that freedom awaits them.
Hi, everybody. Welcome. I'm Mandy with Mandy Speaks Up. In today's podcast episode and interview, I'm going to have Christina here. I'm super excited to have her. Her very horrific but brave story. I believe it's perhaps one of the first times, if I'm correct, that she'll be sharing some of these details. She, of course, you know, she shared her story with many people around her at the time and when she eventually escaped the Potter's House Christian Fellowship Church cult. There were people that she expressed the things that had happened to her, the things that were going on. And so for her to come here into this podcast that I do, and I've interviewed so many. So if you're watching and this is your first time, just know that you can find more interviews that I've already done with many more brave survivors that have escaped the Potter's House International Cult. And you can find all that on my YouTube channel. And you can watch so many more brave interviews. But today with Christina's interview, hers is going to be a little bit different than the others that I've interviewed with because she actually did not choose. She did not choose this church. For many, as myself, I willingly chose to walk into this place because one, I didn't know that it was a cult. I wholeheartedly believed it was just a good little church that was going to help me be a better person. But later, of course, all the red flags, I was just a teenager. I didn't realize all the red flags. And of course, a lot of survivors can attest to the fact that they didn't see the red flags. They didn't know the red flags. They didn't believe them because of their vulnerability and because of the love bombing that we're going to talk about in Christina's story as well. So welcome, Christina. I'm so glad that you have chosen to come on here. I'm super excited for this. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I am a little nervous just because, you know, always giving out stuff that's really deep and personal and things you've been through is very hard sometimes, but I came to the point where I felt like my story needed to reach more people. And I just want to be able to share that and hopefully touch other people so that they can get free too. So
that's very brave. And I know that there will be many listeners that who have already escaped this place and perhaps even some that are in this place today. And they could be watching this secretly. They could be watching the replay secretly. And if they are, I just really, I will give a message for them at the end of the interview. I would love to, if you have any message for those that may be watching that are in the process of questioning this place and they're thinking about leaving, what is some advice that you would give them? And we'll leave this interview with that message. And so let's get into your story. So this is going to take you, we're going to take everybody back to 2001, because this is when Christina's journey with the Potter's House Christian Fellowship Church, worldwide international cult that still exists today and could very well be very near you, could be one of your local churches, and you may not even know that this is the same church we're talking about. And so even for somebody that has never been in a cult, this could be a very informational video for you. for you to be aware of what could be going on in your community, in your town, in your city, and it could be affecting those that you even know, because how worldwide they are, this is bleeding so much into our society, our community, our cities, and we don't even realize it because we're just looking at it as a church, as a nice little church. So you said that your journey started in 2001. And like I said, you didn't choose this particular place. This is not your choice. This wasn't your choice. So I want you to take me back to why it wasn't your choice. Begin how, you know, what was it that even got you there? And what was the choice that you had to make? Because you had to make a choice to either attend this place or basically be homeless. So if you would like to share that story.
Yeah, so back in 2001, I was working at a call center, and that's where I met my soon-to-be husband. I was living with a family member, and I had only known my husband for about like 2 months. It was a pretty quick date. And hey, do you want to get married to me? And I was just like, oh, looking for love in all the wrong places type of thing, just wanting to feel validated and loved. And I was like, yeah, sure, let's get married. So we get married, and I mean, none of my family really knew him or anything. And so me and him decided to go live with his parents because they offered us to stay with them at their home, which was a 2-bedroom, 2-bath, little tiny apartment. So we were living there. We were still doing our own thing. Like you, I used to love going out. I like to go to the clubs. I like to go dancing and just have fun and just feel like I could relax and enjoy myself and not feel pressured to do things. And my husband at the time was also into the club scene and everything as well. And I didn't know anything about his upbringing. I didn't know anything really about his family. Like I said, I just went into this whole situation pretty blind, just wanting to feel loved. And I was like, hey, this person's saying they love me. So we got married, we moved in with his parents. And it was probably like maybe a month after we had started living there that his dad was like, you have to go to church. And I was like, no, I don't want to. I didn't know what church or anything at the time. And I was like, no, I'm not. Like, I grew up in a Christian background. I grew up growing up in churches. My father was in the military. We moved around a lot. So it wasn't that I didn't believe in God. It wasn't that I didn't necessarily like churches at the time. I just, that wasn't my scene. That wasn't what I was doing with my life at that time. I didn't want to do that. Like, if I wanted to go to church, I want to make the choice to go. Well, his dad pretty much told us if we didn't go to the church and start attending regularly that he was going to kick us out. And we refused still. And so he started putting all of our belongings on the porch, like literally taking our clothes and everything. And I was just like, fine, we'll go to church. Like, because we didn't have anywhere else to go. It was either stay there or be out on the street. And so we finally decided to go to church. And that's what started the beginning of me going to the Potter's house.
So you refuse to want to attend this place, and he literally begins to throw your stuff out into the street. So basically it's, you're going to go to this place or else, basically. Yeah. And one reason why I am so, like, I believe this story is because I continuously seen this in my time in this place where, leaders and men in this place didn't have a choice. They had to kick out their any family members inside their home, even if they were minors. They had to kick them out if they got pregnant, if they were doing things they weren't supposed to, they were sinning. They had to kick them out, and they would boast about the things that they would do for God by sending their kids, you know, into the streets because they wouldn't obey the rule of you got to go to church every single day. So how old are you at this point?
I was 19 at the time.
Wow. So here you are 19. Of course, I feel like any 19-year-old, you know, and you're vulnerable. And I mean, come on, they're telling you homeless or go. So at this point, you have no idea that it's a cult or the craziness of it, right?
No, all I knew is that it was a Christian church. And so I was like, that made me feel a little bit better because at least it lined up with what I had grown up with, at least what I had thought it lined up with, you know what I mean? So I was just like, fine, you know, and I didn't know like the depth of like how long his parents were involved. I didn't know that he had grown up in this church and was kind of doing his own thing, which is kind of weird because he was living with his parents too. So before we got married, and he was doing his own thing, but yet he was still living there. And then he gets married, and then they're like, oh, you need to go to church or you're not living here.
And how old was he?
24. Mm. Yeah, so he was older than me. His mom was still making him lunches and like taking care of him and doing all that for him. It seems like the men, especially in this church and this fellowship cult, they get very babied. They're weighted on hand and foot. And if you don't do those things, then you're a bad wife. You're a bad woman. And my thing throughout the whole time I was in this cult was, no matter what anyone else said, oh, it's a cult. Like, because I had family members tell me, you know, this is a cult and X, Y, and Z. And I was just like, no, no, no. And I was like, I'm doing this because I need to. I'm just trying to be a good wife. I'm just trying to support my husband, you know, and I would refuse to listen to them and what they were saying. And I mean, I wish I had sooner, but sometimes you just really need to go through very serious things in order to see the light. So, but yeah, they are very babied. And I was always waiting on him like hand and foot, and it just never seemed good enough. Like anything you do in that cult, it just never makes you feel like you're doing enough. You're never good enough. You always try.
Especially as a woman.
Yeah. And it's not about pleasing God. It has nothing to do with that. It's about pleasing the man and making yourself look good to them. And that includes backstabbing, that includes lying, that includes doing whatever you can to make yourself look better. But we're supposed to be a Christian. We're supposed to be doing what God wants us to do, yet you're real quick to throw me under the bus because you want to try to make yourself look better so you can rise up in the ministries and get somewhere. Why, I thought we were on the same side. I thought we were all trying to reach the same goal, but it's not like that. It's how can I step all over you so I can get higher up?
That's it. Exactly. I've seen that so much. So what are some of the things that you were involved in as your time in that place? I know you said you were in some ministries, and for those that don't know what ministries is, it's basically things that you do in the cult to basically show your honor and your respect to this place and supposedly to God. So what are some of the things that you were involved in? I know you said like drama, acting.
I was involved in almost every single ministry at one point or another. I started out with nursery because every woman had to do nursery. If you didn't do Bible study or anything like that with your husband, it was required that you had to, especially if you were in ministries, had to do nursery. We had to go to every single outreach, every single prayer meeting. But besides nursery, I was also in band. Like it was a rock band that I was in. I was the singer for. I also was in a rap group. I also did acting drama, which included our haunted houses. Like I said, outreaches, we would go to different cities and go do like outreach teams. And I mean, I'm sure there's stuff I'm missing, but I was in like everything. And then also helping out with like baby showers or women's fellowships or Bible studies. Cause at one point my husband was doing like trying to work up to be a pastor. We almost actually got there, but then right before we got sent out, which was a blessing in disguise, actually, right before we got sent out, we were out of town on a vacation and we decided to see a movie. I think it was like Transformers or something. We're like, we're out of town, you know, we're just going to go ourselves. And he had told somebody, and I was like, what are you doing? Because at that time, we were so far along, it had been years we had been involved, that I'm like, someone's going to say something. Sure enough, the person ran to the pastor and told him, and then they're like, we were going to send you out, but now you have to wait. And I was just like, oh my goodness. I told you.
So basically, you got punished. That's a punishment. Because disciplined, that would be another word they love to use, because you went to the movie theater to watch Transformers.
Yeah. Well, you weren't allowed to do anything. You couldn't have TVs. You couldn't go to the movies, even though people had computers at home. And you hear all the time, oh, we watch stuff on our computer, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, so you allow computers, which in a lot of cases can be worse than a TV or a movie, because it's the web. You have access to everything on the internet, but you allow that. So you can have a computer and then you're gonna trust people not to do anything on there. But then you also couldn't wear pants. You always had to wear like skirts or dresses, especially if you were in a ministry. You couldn't have like too much makeup on, no tattoos, no piercings. You weren't allowed to dye your hair. I dyed my hair a red color once. And it was like a natural red, but it was very vibrant. You know, it wasn't like I bleached my hair blonde and then put like bright red in it. And the pastor's wife comes up to me and she's like, you're only supposed to dye your hair natural colors. And I was like, this is natural. And I walked away like, I was like, really? I'm not going to try and dye my hair after I just dyed it a red, like a subtle red color. Like, it's just, it was crazy. A lot of these stuff.
Yeah, keep sharing some of the, because that's the question I was going to ask next. What are you're sharing some of the rules and the things that you had to obey. What are some other things that you had to obey? I mean, no movies, you couldn't have a TV in your house. How many days are you going to church at this point?
I would say I might have 2 days a week where I wasn't going. Pretty much every day we were either doing an outreach program or a drama scene or some type of Bible study or fellowship or prayer. I said prayer meeting already, I think. It gets Bible. You know, after I had sent you the email, I was just thinking about all this other stuff. And I'm like, geez, there's so much more stuff that you don't even think about until after you start sharing your story. And it's just, it gets overwhelming from time to time because you're like, man, I went through all that, but I survived. So at least I'm out on the other end.
Exactly.
But that was a big thing though. If you were involved in ministries, you needed to be at every prayer session, which we had church twice on Sundays and once on Wednesday or Thursday, depending on when, because it used to be on Wednesdays and then they would switch it around. But before that, they would have like a Bible study before service Sunday mornings, but you'd have to also be at prayer. And that's one of the things once I got towards the end before I got out was that when you were in the prayer little area, the room that you'd go in and you were praying, it wasn't for you between a conversation between you and God. It was so everyone could hear and be like, oh, that person, they're so holy. They're so like amazing. Look at how much they're praying. It was so man, again, could look at you and be like, okay, you're doing good. Because in the Bible, it doesn't say to pray like that. It says to pray between you and God, not out loud for everyone to hear what you're saying. And yet,
they definitely like to put on a show.
Yeah. A lot of their stuff contradicts the word of God. And that is one big red flag, which I ignored for a very long time because I wanted to do what was right. And also, I didn't want to go to hell because that's something that they really nail into your head. Like, anything you do, you're going to go to hell. Oh, goodness, you looked the wrong way at somebody. You're going to go to hell. I'm not saying you should look the wrong way at people, but like, you watched a movie, you're going to hell. You had a glass of wine, you're going to hell. You didn't wear pants or you didn't wear a dress today to church, you're going to hell. Like that in the beginning, that's what made me stay. So if we go back to 2001 when I first started going, the way they preach is they take everything from the outside and they make it into a sin. So no matter what it is, even if you're a Christian going to another church, you're still a sinner. You're not good enough. Unless you go to this church and you believe everything we tell you, you're just going to hell. So when I first started going, the stuff they were saying and preaching just made me feel like, oh no, I'm such a sinner, a bad person. I'm going to hell. I don't want to go to hell. So instead of coming to God in the right way and believing in God for the right reasons, you come to him out of fear of not wanting to go to hell, which is, that's not why you should go to any religion. So,
So let's go into the love bombing, because you started going and you said the love bombing is actually one of the things they're most famous for. And that's what helped. That's what got me to stay. And that's what we were taught to do when new people would come into this place. We were taught to love bomb them. Of course, we didn't know it was love bombing, but we were taught to begin to bring them and love them. So what is some love bombing they did to you guys?
So starting with like the very first time we went to the service, people just start like coming up to you at the end. And it's almost like they're bidding, you know, like a bidding war. They start coming up to you and talking to you and being like, oh, can I take you out? Can I go, you know, get you a coffee? Oh, you guys want to come over for dinner? So we slowly, like, there's so many people asking you that you have to, like, pick and choose. And then, so it's like they're buying you. They're buying your love. They're buying you to stay at the church. Like, you're an object to be bought. So they do it in a way though that makes you feel like, oh, these people are so friendly and they're taking me out to eat and this is nice, this is amazing, you know, one less meal I have to pay for. But it's like a constant thing. It's almost every day. And then it gets to the point once they see that you're starting to settle in and you're not going anywhere, then it starts to like kind of, they start stepping back. And then they're like, hey, why don't you look, that there's a new person. Why don't you go take them out and you try and see, like, you start getting people to stick, you start bringing people in. And that's also another big thing, is they are always wanting you to bring people in, like family members. And I mean, I did invite my family multiple times and they did come sometimes, but I'm thankful that they didn't stay. I'm thankful that they sing through it. That was also another blessing, that they sing through the lies and the misdirection and the manipulation and the deceit, and that it was a cult. Like, my mom was just like, from the very first thing, she's like, that's a cult. And I'm just like, no, mom. You know? So they had better discernment at that time. Again, I was young, but the back to love bombing. So that's how it starts. And then you're expected to start doing it too. And that's also another way you raise in the ranks of the church. Yeah. It's almost like a pyramid scheme. You start bringing people in, you get them the stick, that makes you look better. And then you teach them how to do it and so on and so forth.
Exactly. I love how you're explaining it because it's exactly true. And so as your ex-husband decides to become or wants to become a cult leader, do you remember what is your experience in now being married to somebody who they're training to become a cult leader? How does that affect you? What's involved? How do they train from your perspective? Because you yourself were on your way to become a future pastor's wife, a cult leader's wife. So what's involved there? What are some things that affected you in the way they trained him or trained you? What are some things they did to train you to be a cult leader's wife?
You have to be perfect, pretty much. But that's unattainable, and that's really hard. So the thing is, like I said, you have to do everything. You have to do all the ministries. You have to be at all the prayer meetings. You have to bring in people. You have to make them stick. He also started to do sermons. Like he would do Sunday sermons or Wednesday night sermons. We had to have our own Bible study. So it was like your whole life besides him working. I was a stay-at-home mom for most of the time I was in the church. I'm actually back to stay-at-home mom now too, but that's because my husband now is in the army and I have like fibromyalgia and things like that. So it's just easier for me to take care of the home and my husband. But I choose to do it this time instead of being forced to do it the last time. So we have to take care of the home. We have to be able to speak to other women and guide them and direct them and tell them how they need to treat their husbands. And
how do they need to treat their husbands? Let me just cut you in there. How are they training you to treat your husband?
Just to be submissive to all their wants and needs and their desires, and nothing that you want or need really matters. I remember there was countless times I would just beg him to be like, spend time with me, talk to me, like be there for me, like help me build a career, because there was times where I had chances to be an actress and I gave up all that for him because he wanted to be a pastor and start his own church. But yet I was the one that was pushing him. Like, you say you want to do these things, yet you're not doing the things you need to. You need to do this. You need to do that. You need to, you know, like, so it was like he could be as lazy as he wanted to when it came to the ministries and doing that. And if he wasn't actually doing what he was supposed to, then it would fall on me. Like, are you satisfying all his needs? Are you, you know, taking care of him? Are you cooking? Are you cleaning? Is the house in order? How are your kids? Like, oh, that was another big thing, is when because we had two boys together. I actually have three boys all together now, but me and him had two boys together, and they're like so strict on discipline. Like, if your kid acts out in any way, or is even being a kid, then it's like, you're not punishing them enough. You're not spanking them enough. Your kids are bad because you're not a good parent. And da 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 da. My kids were struggling in school because they had attention issues. And I was disciplining them, and I was like doing everything I could to make sure that they would listen and they would preach against you giving your children any type of help medically, because that's not the right way. That's bad for your kids. God doesn't want that. You just need to pray harder. You need to believe in God more. If you're not, then it's your fault that your kids are like that. So I got to the point where I was so frustrated because I was like, I'm doing everything you say I need to be doing, and it's still not right. And my kid is still struggling. So now my kid comes before what you say. So I tested on my oldest. I gave him like half of a caffeine pill to see, because if they have ADD, that actually helps them. It's a natural way of seeing if it'll help them focus or not. And his teacher was like, he's doing amazing in school. Like, what's going on? So then I was like, okay, I'm taking him to the doctor. So then I start getting them the help they needed. And I was like, I don't care what anybody says about that. But that's another big thing. The family being in line. They talk about sexual things a lot too, especially the women. Sexual things about how you're taking care of your husbands or what you're doing. And they want, like, because we would be at the women's fellowships and they would want like details. They would get very personal. And like, I could see if that's like a best friend and you're just like talking. But even with my best friend, I don't get into details about my personal sex life with my husband, you know, but it was like they fed off of it. And that was also something that I dealt with a lot through my years in that cult, was being sexually targeted, I guess you would say. It's probably not the best word to use, but I mean, from the women to the men. So, but anyway, I'm kind of going off on a tangent now.
Well, we can go into that. What are some of the things that you dealt with personally that you can, you know, that you feel was a violation?
I dealt with several different things. The pastor's wife was one of the people. She would always like come to me and like pinch my butt. I mean, to some people that would be like, oh, she's just being funny or cute. But it, like, to me, I was just like, I didn't know how to react, because it'd just be like randomly all the time. Like almost every service, she'd be like, oh, you just have a cute butt or whatever, you know, and she'd like pinch my butt. And I'd just be like, what the, like, is this my head? And it would be the pastor's wife. And I would just be like, oh, okay, that's happening, you know what I mean? And you don't want to say anything or like offend them, because you're like, well, this is the pastor's wife. I don't want to upset her, you know what I mean?
So a lot of like getting into your bubble, getting into your private space, but it's allowed because what's their name? Their name and their label that goes with their name, right? The pastor's wife, the pastor, or the high leaders, and they're training you to become them. And so it's very power. It's like, because they have power, they're able to get away with things. And so there are some things that you mentioned that, you know, the physical violation to you. You know, I dealt with physical violation in that place as well, but it's not something that comes to the attention of others, and it's not something that you're encouraged to speak of. You're not encouraged to go to the authorities. You're not encouraged to tell anybody, because then you are cursed, because you're speaking against the very people that are connected to God and basically are God themselves, because in that place they are reverenced as God. So these pastors are reverenced as God. And so if God violates you, abuses you in any way, then it's got to be okay, because like, if it wasn't okay, then God would stop it. God wouldn't have let it happen. So now you're accepting it and you're keeping it inside and you're not being able to share it. But you do mention that you did share some of the things that happened to you to like family members or your own ex-husband.
Yes. I mean, that wasn't the only thing that I had experienced when I was in that church. I had several of the men, married men, doing things to me, like making it a point to brush up against me so that they would touch my boobs or my butt, or, you know, making sexual gestures to me, like grabbing themselves and looking at me and doing that, you know, the eye thing, you know, like, hey, you know, right next to their wife would be like right there. Every time that something like that happened, I would always tell my husband. I told him every single time. And he would always be like, "Are you sure? Are you sure that's happening?" I'd be like, "Yes, I know for a fact what is happening to my body. The door, like, you can't see my hands. I'm like, the door would be like far enough where I'd be all the way on this end. And there'd be plenty of room for your skinny person to go through here without touching me. But you made a point to get right up against me and go and touch all over my body." And it happened more than once. And I would tell him that. I even brought it up to his mother, and she said it's just because I had too many sexual pheromones that I just let off all the time. And so guys would come to me. I had guys texting me that they were having dreams about me going down on them. I had guys getting excited.
And these were people, these were like, were they cult? Were they pastors? Were they just leaders in the church?
Or just some of them were in ministries or would head up ministries. Some of them ended up pastoring their own churches.
And so let's go into that, because you mentioned that there was some men that had accusations, and we don't have to go into what those accusations were, but you have these men that had accusations on them of things that they had done, and people were speaking up and saying they had done these things. But even with those accusations, they were still allowed to become a pastor in this cult, and chances are many of them are still pastors in this cult, this international worldwide cult that boasts of about 3,000 churches worldwide. So chances that some of these men are still in these places could definitely be true, like they're still there. So these men that had these accusations, they then become what, pastors?
Yes. So some of them did become pastors. Some of them were leading like the worship teams. One of the things was the person that would look at me and grab himself was one of the ones that became a pastor who had done some things with a girl that was underage at the time. And eventually he gets mentored into pastoring his own church. And I'm not sitting here judging people. I'm not saying people can't change, but the chances of a person like that who does it to multiple people, they feel like they're in power, like they got some type of power over you or over people that they feel are less than them. You're going to put them in a position of power. What do you think they're going to do? You think they're just going to stay on the straight and narrow? Hopefully, but chances are that's not going to happen. I'm on my third marriage. There are times to try. My first two were abusive emotionally, physically, and they don't change. They don't change. Gave them chances after chances after chances, saying, "Hey, we're going to get better." Blah, blah. It doesn't change. So the same thing in the church. If somebody is like that, chances are they will not change. My ex-husband would leave up pornographic things on the computer. I'm sitting here begging him to be intimate with me and do things with me. And he's in the church, he's in ministries. And then he would do that and then be like, "Oh, I'm so sorry, it won't happen again." And this is the same man that let other men do things and violate me. This is the same man who let someone orally rape me when I was passed out. And I had to wake up to this and realize it was my husband. And it was with another group that was in the church. We had went on a road trip. We decided like, "Oh, we're out of town. Let's," because it's like you're out of town. No one's watching you. You're like, you want to feel freedom because you don't know how else to express yourself because you're in this cage, you're just locked down and you have to be perfect all the time. So we're like, "Hey, let's have a few drinks." So we have a few drinks. I hadn't drank it in so long. I end up passing out, And then I wake up to this man, down on me, and I'm thinking it's my husband, and then he walks out of the shower. I kick this guy off of me, and I'm like, what is going on? And he's like, oh, I said he could finish you.
I'm like, and so, and these were all men from, and these were all people from inside the church.
Yes. Yes.
And so these are people that you eventually have to go back and worship and yes. worship with. And what are some things that you would say basically, and like, you know, horrific experiences, you know, and I'm validating and I'm sorry for your story, because like, this is just one in probably, you know, hundreds of stories. And I've talked to other women, I've interviewed other women that have shared stories that are similar. And so sadly, your story isn't like far-fetched, right? Your story isn't unbelievable. Unfortunately, you know, this stuff was happening. If you were brave enough to share it, how many more haven't shared it? How many more have chosen to just be silent about it? And that's okay. Like, if they choose to be silent, I mean, it's their story. They can do whatever they want with it. But with you sharing your story, I want people to know that, you know, you're sharing it because, like, why are you sharing it? You're sharing it so that just in case there's other people that have gone through it, we want you to know. We want you to know that there's validation. Like, we believe you, because our stories sound crazy, but this is actually still, what year? You were in it from 2001, and then what year did you leave?
Almost all the way until, so the ending of 2012, almost to 2013. But the thing is, too, is that I didn't say, like, my husband knew, of course, because he let it happen, my ex-husband. I didn't say anything to anyone else after it had happened because I was just ashamed. I went through fits of, like, not being able to, like, I felt like such a bad person because I couldn't forgive this other person for violating me. And I didn't really have anyone to talk to. And I should have left right then, you know, but again, because I'm being controlled and mind controlled and gaslit and everything, I stayed in that marriage and I stayed in that church. But the guy that had done that to me started spreading rumors that I had sex with him. And so pastor calls us in. I was like, that's not what happened. But no one's, like, they're looking at me like I'm lying. Like, these guys are believing the lies of this other man. And because I'm a woman, so I must have done something to encourage this, to make this happen to myself. So I could perfectly understand why nobody would want to speak out if they're in this church about things that happened, because the women are always wrong and the men are always right. Unless you're a pastor's wife, then you have some more power behind what you say. But even still, you're going to be the one that's blamed for everything. You're the reason why men are looking at you this way. You're the reason why you're getting abused at home. It's stuff you're doing. Oh, you want to spend some time with your husband and talk to them, but they don't want to do that. So what are you doing wrong? It's not, they're abusing you emotionally and saying these things and tormenting you. What are you doing wrong? It's not about what they're doing wrong. It's just about what the woman is doing wrong. And it's very oppressive and it's very sad. And I just hope that if there's people in that they can go to someone and say what's going on, because don't go to the church and tell anyone that's what's going on. Go to someone outside the church and tell them.
Yes, outside the church. Thank you for saying that. Definitely, that's what's going to end up saving you. I know that's what saved me. And that is eventually what saved you, that we'll get into. But before we get into how you got out and the risk that you took to get out and escape, you mentioned that you watched girls as young as 15 get married off. And that's something that I personally witnessed. But not many people witness that, because of course all these cults operate under one system. But you're not seeing 15-year-olds get married off like all the time. But when it does happen, It validates my experience of me watching. I watched a 15-year-old, I watched a 16-year-old, and then I myself was 17-year-old. So this was normal. So can you talk a little bit about watching 15-year-olds, 17-year-olds get married off, women, girls, not even women, they're girls.
Yeah, and we know that they have to get the permission of their parents, but if they're all in the cult, then, you know, that's going to be pretty easy. So they were always saying it's better to get married than to burn, which was if you're, because we all know teenagers, we're going to have hormones and they're going to be going all crazy and we're going to want to do stuff with the person we like and everything. So you always had to be chaperoned. But I remember the one time I was actually chaperoning this couple, and they would come over because they each lived in the building. They were like neighbors and they wanted to spend time and be together all the time because they were dating, you know. And I'm like on the computer trying to show them stuff. And I turn around and they're like on the couch, like in a, like all over each other. And I was just like, I didn't know what to do. But then it was shortly after that where, because they wanted each other so much, they didn't want to wait anymore to have sex. And the church is always like, hey, you can't have sex outside of marriage. And if you're at that point where you're going to have sex, then you better get married. So they didn't care how old you were. If you got the permission of your parents to get married, then you could get married at 15. And she was 15 and he was 17. And it's like, how about you just like let them be teenagers and do their thing and figure out what they want to do with life first before you just throw them into a marriage that they're going to have to try and figure out. And then, of course, that person, especially the male, is going to be having issues. And he was actually one of the ones that eventually started telling me about having dreams about me and doing sexual stuff to me and stuff like that, because he got married when he was 17 and he's in the church surrounded by women. You know, he's going to have these thoughts and go through these things because all he ever did was date one person and then get married and get thrown into this relationship before they were ready. Because
right.
You don't get married, and if you have sex, you're going to hell.
Yeah, everything's about hell.
That's a horrible reason to get married. I mean, I know. I got married because I just wanted to be loved, and I was already having sex and everything, but like, we get married for wrong reasons and then we have to deal with the consequences, and the church just supports it. They just back it. They don't care about the consequences. They don't care if your life is going to be miserable. They just want to try and make themselves still look good to the outside world.
Right. And to produce more churches.
Yeah.
They have to produce more churches, and that's the reason why they have to get, you know, kids married. They have to get these people married as fast as possible so that they can continue to do, like you said, the pyramid scheme of creating more churches, more cults. And I mean, and it's worked, because honestly, they now, their website boasts about 3,000 cults worldwide. And the one that you were in, I know you said it was in Reno, Nevada. The one I was in was in Amarillo, Texas. But I've interviewed people that left the cult, the Potter's House in Australia. A pastor's daughter. I've talked to so many different people with crazy, insane stories. But I believe like the craziest story of it all is that it still exists. You take your phone out if you're watching this and literally Google the Potter's House Fellowship Church.
And they also go by the door too. They do send out some churches that go by the door. So make sure it's not part of the Potter's House.
Right. The Potter's House, the door, especially those two are the really top ones. And if you Google the Potter's House or the door near me, I've had people message me after they've seen some of my interviews, and they were literally like, I Googled it and there's one like literally a couple miles from me. And I'm like, yeah, their symbol is an earth with fire. So that every one of those churches will have the same symbol if they're connected, which is an earth with fire. And literally they're the same. So it doesn't matter what, you know, the crazy thing is we've all gone to different ones. I don't think I've interviewed anybody that was in the same one as mine in Amarillo, Texas, but their stories have been very similar. And that's what's so freaky to me, because that's how cults operate. And so if you believe you're in a cult, or you believe somebody's in a cult, whether it's in this cult or another cult, I do recommend, I believe his name is Dr. Steve Eshel. And I've had him, I'm going to link him down below, but he's one of the top ones that I truly recommend. He researches cult environments and the bite model, which talks about the things that cults will do. And you will basically compare that to your church or your environment. It can be anything, and even a relationship, and you'll be able to see the red flags and connect it. And that'll be a help for those that are wondering, am I go to this church, but I don't think it's a cult. And I've had many people message me as well and be like, I go to that church, but I don't believe it's a cult. And I would say, can you question them without being ridiculed, humiliated, or punished? Is their sermons constantly about everything sending you to hell and you're a bad person, you're a sinner, you have to repent? Some of the crazy things, you know, confessing and going in front of the whole church and having these leaders lay hands on you, which if some of these leaders have accusations of being predators, now you have a position, you're in a position where these cult leaders are now allowed to touch you, and you don't even have permission to say, don't touch me. Don't put your hands on me, because in that environment, you've already been groomed and manipulated that automatically any cult leader can put their hands on you automatically. If they're praying for you, they can automatically, they do not have to ask you. They don't have to ask for consent. I've never seen that. I don't know if they're doing that now, but I kind of doubt it, but they automatically can lay hands on you and touch your physical body because they are a leader or a pastor. They automatically have the right to do that. And that's if you're in a position where some of these people have accusations of being a predator or have done things, now they automatically get to touch you. So that in itself is a train wreck.
Yeah. And you know, what's funny about that too, is my husband is stationed here in El Paso now, and I've driven around the city a few times and I've seen a few of the Potter's houses, and I'm like, oh no, it's a Potter's House church. Like, I'm like, oh my gosh, they're everywhere. And so I was like, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to tell everybody, this is a cult. You need to leave now. And I was like, no, I won't do that. But my husband started laughing because he knows the whole— he was actually one of the people that helped me get out towards the end there.
We can get into that. How did you get out? Tell us how you took that risk and you did something. I like to say you did something that wasn't allowed, which is going to outsiders, because you're not allowed to have a relationship or have friends outside of this place. But you did. Did you start working? Which is another thing, like, you started working. That's not really allowed as a woman. Encouraged. So you did that. And then you met an outsider, and then he literally became a safe place for you. And eventually you were able to risk it all and escape.
Yeah. I will go into that. There was something I wanted to touch in on really quick. With the pyramid scheme and everything, is something I noticed is that it seemed like they targeted the low income people more so than the people that had money to do ministries and stuff. The people that they had money, they would let them, like, they kind of just let them be and let them do their own thing. And then because they were bringing in the extra income, so they didn't want to ruffle any feathers. But the lower income people that couldn't contribute as much is the people that they got more serious with. And I just wanted to touch on that. So if you see people that actually come from a wealthy background or have money or influence in that way, you a lot of the times see that they don't really mess with them that much because that's an income source for them and mm-hmm. it goes through the whole pyramid scheme. I just wanted to bring that up really quick. That's but good. So with me getting out, I finally decided, I was like, look, I need to do something. I need to get out and work. You're not doing all the stuff that you said you were going to do. And I want to be able to help financially and do something with my life. So I ended up working for a company. Towards that time though, I had started questioning things. Like I was already uncertain. It was like God was starting to show me things in my life and in the church. And I would bring questions to my husband and be like, hey, you know, they're always telling us you have to tithe 10%. You have to give all this money, like give. And if you didn't, then you were a sinner and that whole thing again. So I was reading in the New Testament and it was talking about how you should give out of your heart. And not 10%. It didn't mention anything like that. And I was like, hey, to my ex-husband, I was like, you know, in the New Testament, it tells us that we should give from our heart and not to give 10%. Like, it doesn't say you have to give 10%. It says you need to give out of your heart in a joyful manner, like something that you're like, I want to bless God or these people with this money, you know? And he was like, what's wrong with your heart? And I was like, are you serious right now? And he's like, yeah, there must be something wrong with you if you're questioning giving 10%. And I was like, no, I'm just saying this is what the Bible. So it was things like that here and there. And I was like, you do know 2 Timothy 2:15, it says study to find yourself approved. And it's talking about how we need to study the word of God and figure stuff out for ourselves between us and God and not to listen to man and twist scripture. It even says that, to not twist scripture into making it what you want it to be. Not to listen to man that is using it for their own purpose. And that's the whole thing for the Potter's House. That's their whole thing. They take the scripture and they twist it to get you to stay in that cult. Anyway, so that was right when I started going to work. And, you know, I was working long hours and everything. And then I had this guy. He was like, hey, I met a girl too. She was very helpful because she was like a free spirit. And she was there for me too. She listened to me. But this guy who's like, hey, do you think I could get a ride home? And I was like, sure. So I gave him a ride home and we started talking. Like, I'm like, this guy, he's just like, he's talking to me and like listening to me and like being an outlet that I could express myself to and like no condemnation. Like, we just clicked. There was just something there and we clicked. And I told him everything about the church and about my ex-husband, and he even called him the devil. He was like, that's the devil incarnated. That's the son of the devil, his spawn, you know, because of everything I had gone through. And I would be literally in bed next to my husband at that time texting this other person. And I'm a faithful person. Like, I don't believe in like cheating or anything like that, like for myself. But I had been so abused emotionally and physically from this person that I was just done. I didn't love that person anymore. So I'd be sitting.
You were physically abused from the ex-husband that you were in the cult with?
Yes, from both my ex-husbands, but yes, from him too.
So, okay, because I just want to clarify that this is a man that was attaining leadership in this as a position in the cult while you were suffering physical abuse from him.
Mentally and emotional too. So it wasn't just physical. The main things was the emotional, mental, and there was some physical. Emotional and mental abuse can sometimes be worse. All abuse is horrible, but because of what it does to your mind, it can take a lot longer to heal from it. But he didn't care about me. He didn't care about anything I did. I would be sitting next to him in bed texting this person that was there for me. Wouldn't even ask, wouldn't even care who I was texting. Didn't even want to know what was going on in my life. And finally, I had enough. I told this person, I was like, I want out of this marriage. I need to get out of this whole situation, the church, everything. I was like, can you help me? I found an apartment and I was like, can you help me go to the house so I can tell him I'm leaving him and move my stuff into this apartment? So I finally got enough courage to go there, and I brought the other person with me to have backup in case something went wrong. And I was like, I'm leaving you. And he's like, what? I was like, yeah, I'm leaving you. And he just didn't know what to do. And I was like, he's like, how? And this guy never cried. Like, even with our firstborn, like, I was all, you better cry because I'm giving birth to your son. And like, he was trying to like squeeze out tears. This guy like never cried about anything. And then he was like actually crying, which I was like kind of shocked, you know, that he's like crying. And I don't know if it was just because like he's going to look so bad to everybody in the church, which is probably what it was. But he's sitting there and he's crying. And I was like, he's all, you don't love me anymore. Tell me you don't love me. And I was like, I don't love you anymore. If I can tell that to somebody, I already knew my heart was over. But if someone I thought I had loved, if I can tell them I don't love them, there's no going back. The thing is though, so I got out, I got my own apartment, and then like you get so controlled and so many mind games when you're in that church and you get out of it that you're like, oh no, I'm such this bad person. I'm going to hell. Maybe I should go back. I don't know what to do. So there was a few times where like I would go back to my ex-husband and be like, maybe we should work it out. And then we would start fighting and I was just like, yeah, no, I'm not. And that's when I really knew that it was over. Nobody in that church, not one single person, well, sorry, one person did, but nobody else reached out to me. No one else asked me, what's going on? How can we help? Do you need help? Are you okay? These people that said they were my friends and family for 12 years just turned their back on me and didn't even care. Anytime I was around, because I had kids with my ex, and if he would have them or I had to go pick them up, they wouldn't even look at me. They wouldn't even talk to me. I think there was like one or two people that actually would. And then some of the people that would talk to me ended up eventually getting out of the church themselves. So they probably already knew the same things. But for you to give your everything to something and to a place that you think you're doing what's right and you're living correctly, and for everyone to just totally abandon you, that's not God. That's not Christianity. He would be the first one to reach out to you. He would be the first one to go sit with you and have a beer with you. Like, really, you're going to sit there and just totally abandon somebody that was someone that you knew for all this time and act like they're nothing? Yeah, it's just, that's another thing, because I watched a very popular docuseries about another cult, and there were so many similarities. I think that's what really made me finally be like, I need to get my story out too, because there's so many people suffering. There's so many people going through horrible things. And they just need to be able to see that, hey, there, you can get out and you can survive, and there's people that will be there for you and support you. the person that helped me get out, you know, he's my twin flame, my soulmate. We kind of walked different paths after he helped me. We kind of went different ways for about 7 years, and I was with another man, went through another abusive relationship. And at the end of that, I seen he was single again. And so I was like, hey. And then we reached back out to each other and we just clicked like no time had ever passed. And now he's in, and I'm blessed to have him. And, you know, I finally have gotten out and I have a beautiful life now. And it's amazing that once you get out, you can actually move on and slowly start healing. And I don't go to church anymore, because of what man has made it. So it's kind of ruined it for me. It's kind of made me not trust the society's vision of what church is. I'm not saying that there aren't good churches out there. There probably is. A lot of men, they'll use it because they want to be in power. And to me, I still believe in God. I still believe that there's a God and I love him wholeheartedly, but I will believe him in the way that I feel is the right way and not what man has told me is. It specifies in the Bible where two or more are gathered in my name, there I am also in your presence, you know? And so me and my husband will have our own little like conversations, and that's church to me, you know, like I'm talking about God and the creator and everything that he does. I don't need to go to a church where you're going to try and make me feel bad about stuff because you want to manipulate me into doing what you want me to do. So,
good for you. I'm super proud of you, and I'm so glad that you were able to escape and get out of the role and disobey. Good job for disobeying and going outside of the box and getting that job and finding somebody that became your safe place. And then years later, you guys get married. I think that's just a beautiful story. Like, good for you. You deserve that. And I think that in this place, there's a lot of unworthiness that is connected to us, that we believe we're deserving of the punishments and the discipline that they give to us. And we live in a cycle and we walk away completely shunned. You know, you say you were shunned. I was completely shunned as well as many, 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 many others. The whole entire story is extremely, it's like you could sit down and watch this on Netflix. Like this is your story could, our stories could be on a docu-series. It could be on Netflix where you sit there and you're like, oh, damn, like I couldn't live that if it was real, but we did. We lived it. It was real life for us, for you, 12 years going in as a 19 young girl, being married into it and actually having, I feel like it was more of a force, right? It was like, go to this church or be homeless. Like who's going to pick to be homeless? But this is your story and you're happy. You're living your life now. You have so much peace. You can see it all over you. There is life after the potter's house. And that's one of the statements that really helped me when I left is I remember reading that online, somebody that had escaped. And I remember the line said, there's life after the potter's house. And I was like, really? Wow. There's life. Like, yeah, there's a life and you get to do whatever you want and you get to be happy. And so what is your message? So let's say somebody's watching that is in this cult, or maybe they're not in a cult. Let's say they're in a relationship, because you survived both of those, you know, an abusive, full of hatred, especially towards women. You know, it's just like this misogynistic, power struggle in this place. And that happens in a relationship as well. So what would be your message to the world if they are in a relationship like that, or they're in this specific, the Potter's House or the Door cult? What would be a message for them?
Reach out to somebody, anybody, start talking to them what you're going through. That's the biggest first step, because the more you can talk through something, the more you'll be able to realize the situation you are in and realize that, hey, I need to do something to change. Whatever you do, don't stay in that environment, because they're very good at lying and manipulating you to making you feel like you need to stay. Reach out to anyone you feel safe with. Get out. Start being in a different type of environment. I know it sounds easier than it is. It's actually can be very difficult, but it's worth it. The more time that goes by that you're not in the abusive relationship or in a cult, the more you will realize things that you did or things that had happened, and it's not your fault. You didn't do that to yourself. Those people, those cults, they did that to you. And there is light at the end of the tunnel. There is a freedom. And it feels amazing once you can actually feel all the chains and shackles being released to you one at a time. I'm going to cry. One at a time. And just releasing you from all that pain and suffering. And you can be free. You can go out and experience life. Go somewhere that you feel safe. The ocean, lakes, water is always my place. Like, I can really focus and concentrate, and it's just a peaceful, calming, cleansing experience for me. Go directly to God. Go directly to somebody that is on the outside that you can trust, but get out of those situations. And sometimes it takes a big leap of faith. Sometimes it takes getting your own apartment and just moving out of there. If you don't feel safe with letting them know where you're going, please just leave without telling them and get the help you need and take it from there. But yeah, I would just say, like, if you want to continue going to church, find a church that is Bible-based, that will not twist the scriptures. Research it. Make sure you do research on it so you know you're not getting in a similar type of situation. Just live your life, you know, be free and enjoy the things that we've been given and heal. Again, talk it out. You need to heal. That's the biggest thing, is healing, and it takes a long time. And it can be years down the road, and you might just have a breakdown about something because you haven't healed from it, but that's okay. It's normal. It's natural. Eventually, you'll get to the point where you can actually tell your story and not cry. I think this is actually the first time I've told the whole story without crying. So that's an amazing step for me. But I just hope that everybody in the Potter's House will stumble across all these videos that you have done or anything that anyone else has said and realize. And I hope that there's just a mass of people that just start leaving these churches, these cults, and going to actual churches or finding their own beliefs, because until that happens, these cults are still going to be around, and they're still going to be reaching more people. And that's the scary thing about it, is the bigger they get, the more people they get. And it would be amazing. Hey, Netflix, if you're listening, it'd be awesome if you did a documentary on the Potter's House cult or Christian Fellowship Church, because there's so many people out there that we need to get our stories out. And again, Mandy, I thank you so much for letting me have this opportunity. I felt there was so many times on Google that I like posted this long comment about the church and my experience, and then I would be like, oh, and delete it, you know, because my actually two older sons, they're 20 and 19, and they decided to do their own thing once they turned 18, and they live with my ex's parents now. And so that was another reason why I would delete it, because I still have a good relationship with my boys. Their father was like non-existent now, but I didn't want them to get any backlash from it. But I'm at the point where, like, look, that everybody needs to know the truth. And I've told them the truth. And I hope they watch this too, because there's some stuff they don't know. So there's hope out there. There's people that love you enough that will stick around and will help you through whatever you're going through. And you just need to reach out to the people you can really trust that aren't a part, again, of the cult or abusive relationship.
Yes. Thank you so much, Christina. I'm going to put some links below that are going to help for anybody that's in an environment that they are trying to leave safely. I will post some links below for that as well. I am Mandy. This is Mandy Speaks Up Podcast. I have, of course, like I said, more interviews. If you check the links below, you'll find them all in my YouTube channel and Spotify, Apple, and Facebook. So I, again, thank you so much, Christina. I'm so glad that you're out, because you are a face of those that made it out, and you are happy and you're free. And you give so many people hope to know that the life that they lived in that place, you're able to leave and you're able to no longer suffer. You don't have to suffer. And that's what I would say I lived my life in that place suffering, right? And you, your story, suffering, and we leave and we expect to suffer. You don't have to suffer. There's no book that says you have to suffer. There's nothing that says that you have to suffer. And if you're suffering, then that's not the place that you belong, because you belong and you deserve a place where you are no longer suffering. You are no longer crying every single day or every single night. You are now, it's replaced with laughter. It's replaced with pleasure and fun and being a happy parent or a happy human being, so that others can see that and that can radiate to them, and not just a fake picture of this is who I am, so that we can build this place that is just continuously still treating people like shit. So thank you so much, Christina, and thank you all so much for watching. Until next time, bye.